This is a Decentered podcast from Rob Watson, conversations about community media. Look out for Decentered Media on Twitter and on iTunes, or go to decentered.co.uk. Hello, it's Tuesday the 21st of January, and this is a Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson, and with John Costa at the Dot Media Centre in Leicester. And we're joined tonight by John Woodcock from Voluntary Action Leicestershire and Amos Bilson. Have I pronounced that right?
Bilson.
Okay, and his son, who's very shy.
Who's in charge.
He's in charge now. We'll give him a mic in a bit.
In charge of the biscuits.
We're going to talk... One of the things we talk about on this podcast is kind of... It's community media related. But it's kind of how we can think about and use and develop our use of media for positive social change. So we work on projects and we want to try and bring people together who can share their experience of working on different kinds of projects to... enact a sense of kind of social change through recognising social value, through collaboration, but how do we share that with our media and what kind of drives that? So we're thinking about kind of just an opportunity really to just have a discussion and a conversation about what that means in practice and what we might recommend for other people from our experience and what we, you know, the pitfalls, that kind of stuff. So let's start off with you, Amos, because we know each other from previous courses that we've been involved in together, You're now undertaking some research. Started a PhD, I believe. Yes. So just tell us a little bit about what that's about and how you've got into it.
Well, I studied media at De Montfort University. Obviously, I've met John in my first year on a course which were teaching me, a module in radio. Then I've worked with you, I think, throughout my course, and we met on my master's as well. You were my supervisor. Then it didn't go very well at first, but obviously I got time to reflect, and I specifically picked community media to say, this is interesting, because at first I was thinking of doing something that would benefit me financially. Then, you know, I kept going on and researching about community media, and I thought it's something very interesting, because it's still raw. You know, there's a lot of work to be done. It's interesting, whereas some other aspects of media are challenging. So I ended up changing from community filmmaking to just doing generic media to see how we can change things and develop it, and how people can benefit from it. Because obviously there's traditional connotations to it, which people say, you know, characteristics of community media is this and that, etc., etc. But now with media emerging, there are other things coming up as well, where some people are benefiting from it. I was in Zimbabwe in September, and there are people who are engaging in community filmmaking, and they're getting money from it, because people are not really interested in mainstream media in that country. They want to see what's happening on YouTube. They want to listen to the podcast. That's what they're interested in. And they would rather pay for that than pay their TV licenses. So it's just not something. But the thing is, there's no structure to community media in that country. People are interested into it, except if there's structures, it's something that can go a bit further. So I was intrigued and say, oh, wow. It's good to see people like enjoying something. I've spent some time trying to research on, and it's still pushing me, and I'm more curious to try and find where this is going more than anything.
John picked up his microphone a second ago, and I thought he was going to ask a question.
I was going to save my question till we'd heard from John.
All right, okay. So, just go through, you've given me your title of what your research is based around. Just kind of, you don't have to give us the exact title, but you're looking at the diaspora experience of community media, so in the UK.
Yes.
So what, just explain what that means a little bit.
I'm hoping to research on innovative activism. I want to see if we can build up management structures in community media, because what we have in common is the community, whether it be interested in people or nationality or geographically, because we're in a foreign land. But I can't really say, we have a country that's got a media system that's established for years and years. It's doing well. But in a way, a lot of people feel there are some aspects where they don't fit in. Because there is things that come up on TV or whether it be on radio. Some people never relate to it. Then we've got things affecting us in our communities, which we tend to speak about now with the advent of technology, whether it's on Facebook, YouTube, or if it's put in a short film, you can actually relate it. Because in the past few years, you know, things are really happening. There's child poverty, etc. The list is on. It's endless. But it's just people tend to relate on that aspect of media more than the mainstream. If it's managed well, if people can have a better platform and staged well, I think people can benefit from it. Some people could actually get benefit, like in forms of getting employment from it, education, and getting information. So it's quite interesting.
Right, this brings me to John then. So tell us a bit about you, what's your role at VAL, which is Voluntary Action Leicestershire.
Yeah, I run the training department for Voluntary Action Leicestershire. I work on a particular part within VAL, because there are various parts to it, called sector support. So effectively, if I can put this into sort of numbers, there are 2,100 registered charities in Leicestershire, and then there are approximately just over 3,500 unregistered. So that could be community groups or voluntary organisations or social enterprise, etc. If any of those have a query or a question, or they're looking to set up but they're not quite sure how to, or they're looking for extra funding or governance, they need a volunteer, or they want trustees, you know, the list goes on and on. Sector support is able to provide those answers to those organisations throughout Leicestershire. But on top of that, we also supply training on sort of financial management and governance and how to set up, etc., etc. And we run various sort of training workshops. I'm putting together at this moment in time a platform for Eventbrite to go on our website, so that there's safeguarding training for adults at risk. We've got economic impact training that's going out, so that there's you can actually see, you know, in figures the impact that you have in your local community, local area, etc., etc. So there's that one side of my role. Then the other side of my role, because I'm not busy enough, obviously, I do a lot of development. So I work with raising the profile of the VCSE in Leicestershire, but also looking to bring businesses across to work with ourselves at Voluntary Action Leicestershire, but also to work with these VCSE as well, part of their CSR. And I know that we did a big piece at the Midlands Business Expo back in November.
December.
I don't know. See, you know, we've had that Christmas period, and I've lost all sense now.
We had Chris Shaw came in and talked about social responsibility.
Yeah. And my boss Kevin Alan Kamani was doing the podcast with you. We do quite a lot with regards to how we work with so many different connotations of what ostensibly we look at this sort of like the local community. And one of the key things that we've done for the last 50 plus years is to work with the local community in Leicester and Leicestershire in as many different ways as we possibly can, so that we can ensure that those local communities do better, work better, you know, my mantra at the moment is that, you know, if we work together, we're stronger together. And that's trying to get, you know, businesses to talk to charities and et cetera, a lot more than they currently do. And we use as many different mediums as we possibly can. You know, I'm not shy on utilising social media. You know, I do use it as much as I possibly can to get our message across, which is, you know, if you need some assistance, ask us. You know, and if we don't know the answer straight away, we'll find out, because the expertise that we have within Val is second to none. You know, this is an outsider who's been in the third sector now for 4 months. You know, my background is purely business and commercial. So I've come in, fresh eyes, hopefully, and looking at ways that I can bring my thoughts and processes along with what's currently there and do better for good, effectively.
Wow. How do we find these two people for our podcast?
Well, I've just got... I
always feel like we're slamming it normally, but there we go. We've actually got two experts in the room, which is quite good.
He's doing a PhD.
Yeah. I've written down, and there's a real great synergy between... I hate that word synergy, but there's a really good connection between the two approaches, which is one is how and the other one is what. So there's a kind of... The question I suppose I've got is... comes out of listening to what you've both said is we can work out how to do this, mm-hmm. but are we spending enough time thinking about what it is that we're doing? What's our aim out of doing this? And do we spend enough time? So we often focus on skills, mm-hmm. and capacity building and governance and those kind of things, but we're not asking what our cultural experience, our shared cultural experiences, that kind of connects these things together.
I agree. I mean, it's something that I say a lot of, especially more so today and probably the last 4 months, is, you know, in an ideal world, and people hear me say this all the time, so, you know, if whoever listens to this, you know, sorry if I'm saying it again, in an ideal world, we wouldn't be talking about this. You know, there would be no charities, there'd be no voluntary organisations, but unfortunately we don't live in that rose-tinted Shangri-La environment. You know, we do require these types of things that there, so charities and voluntary organisations, so that we can add better value to those that need it. So from my point of view is to how and what we do. Ultimately, you've also got a lump in there is the why.
Yeah. You know what? I want to go back a bit when you mentioned CSR. Mm. It's something important as well, because unfortunately, I never learned about it till about last year when I was doing my master's at Wolverhampton University. Then, like, the world is changing fast, and we've got upcoming business as well. Now, in my community, I want to be specific here, in my community, because, like, some people move to this country, they've worked hard, mm-hmm. and they've got their businesses, but the thing is trying to fit in, because you're likely going to find these people employing people in their local communities. So a few people I've met is mentioning this CSR to say, in many ways, you're responsible to your community. If there are people who are providing your workforce, you have to appreciate them in some ways. They are not asking much, but just to say, you're facing these problems, and we can make a difference. You know, it's not an obligation, but it would make a difference to people if they are aware that interaction in the community needs people who are aware that our community can be better than it is. Mm.
How does that...
I like the look on Rob's face there. Did you see that? He's got a...
There's a question in there somewhere,
yeah,
isn't there?
There's lots of questions.
We've not really touched on community media to this level, actually, for quite a few podcasts now. So this is what makes it quite interesting, which is, I think, why Rob's making notes.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it's kind of, where does it fit is always the question. So what the phrase that you used was my community. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. Let's flesh that out a little bit and just find out, because your experience is perhaps different from many people who might listen to this podcast.
It would be my community, as first would be where I'm coming from, but obviously it's going to expand where I'm fitting into, because it's going to be my community as well. So a lot of the times it's just people not understanding each other. So that communication, this is where maybe community media fits in. That communication, if we try to focus on blind spots, then we are forever blind. But the moment I start, if I'm curious to know what really goes on in Rob's day, oh, I've met John today. We are sort of affiliated in many ways because we're trying to do the same thing, but we have different backgrounds in the same community. So that communication can help smoothen things.
I think the diaspora part of what you're looking to research is quite interesting as well, because you're talking about really lots of different people from lots of different communities rather than just one community.
That's true.
And what you find is that everybody's needs are different depending on whether there's an established network. So the work that I do for Zimphia Trust, for example, you know, we get a lot of unaccompanied refugee and asylum seeker, particularly women, some of whom obviously fleeing conflict. But then again, she'll also be helping people that are, you know, victims and survivors of domestic violence, human trafficking, women that are coming out of prison from whatever kind of stuff. So you've got that one particular charity. Then you might be working with people that are sort of, you know, long-term homeless, that are not sort of, you know, white indigenous people, but are also from a diaspora that could be from Eastern Europe because they've been economic migrants and stuff. Yeah. And I think this is what I'm particularly interested in as a freelance journalist and having run Citizen's Eye for a number of years here, is the fact that every single community, doesn't matter what training that we did with the training school at the BBC, it was always about them being able to get out of it what they wanted.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So rather than sort of, we're teaching about Facebook and how it was always Facebook, wasn't it? Facebook pages, then Facebook events with the Zimbabwean community, but it was always about being able to be reactive, I think, with our training to what people wanted, rather than they want social media 101. What sometimes people want is a specific question answered, and invariably it's around them being able to communicate better. And I think if we can. Oh God, we're really dipping back into our community media roots here, aren't we? But I think one of the very first conversations we had in here, actually in October time, we were talking about the fact that Rob had seen a couple of reports that he'd blogged about and put on his podcast that never mentions community media. But you see, in my mind, community media is a group of our students running a community media cafe, you at your church, you at your Bible group, you at your Quran reading, you knitting, someone over here doing adult colouring for mental health and well-being. To me, all of that comes under community media. And what that means then is that they wouldn't actually identify themselves, self-identify, as actually being in any kind of sector, because it all fits, it's useful to them. And so really, the ability to commercialise it, and I'm use that of a small C, as in give people the opportunity to gain employment, I think it's amazing, because you've just said you've come back from Zimbabwe where people are actually managing to do that. And I just love the fact that as a society we tend to be deconstructing, you know, de-developing, whereas the more travelling, the more we look around the world, we find people to solutions. Maybe we need to be looking at some of the community media best practice that's being done through maybe BBC Media Action, what you're looking to do is supporting you with your PhD, because I think some of that stuff there's some real good learning in there, which people like John can enter and go, actually, let's make that our next social media campaign. It'd just be interesting to see whether we get kind of more traction with it.
I think there's some really important points there. I mean, one of the things that I sort of hooked onto straight away is that, you know, the fact that what you're saying about Rob, community, you know, media isn't mentioned, but it's done every single day. You know, I'm part of 3 or 4 local community Facebook groups that, you know, if you need a plumber, and then there's like 48 messages. But it's still community media to a different remit. And I think that, you know, the bits that you were talking about with, you know, employability within sort of community media, yeah, it can be monetized, you know, albeit it might not be, you know, a multi-billion pound turnover organization, or could it?
Yeah.
It depends on what you classify as community and what your community is.
Well, I actually picked one of the things I started off by saying, that, you know, that idea of purposeful social change, which is something that I actually picked up from the SEER, the event CSR. That we did at the, yeah. Yeah, the, and so the invaluable network, which I want to get you to talk about in a second, is the, you know, using these mechanisms for positive social change, purposeful social change. So unfortunately our social media is often randomised and it's exploited, and it's fueled by a kind of sense of indignation, which is what the Facebook algorithms are designed around, and you know, Twitter to some extent as well. There's a lot of evidence about the kind of manipulation that goes into these things, but community media for me has a grounding in a kind of ethical social responsibility approach, which looks to create value through, you know, mutual, collaborative, beneficial support, rather than just exploiting people's willingness to mouth off about things and moan about things, as much as we can all do that. So
I think you're right. I think that, you know, if you were savvy enough, he says, because I'm not sure I am, you know, to sort of go, well, actually, within your local community, if you can get your media to work and you're able to ensure that charities and businesses all work together in your localised area and everybody is benefiting, that's positive change. With, you know, and you're using the community and you're using media to enact that. For me, that kind of takes place in various forms. You know, I went to a local BNI. You know, sometimes that can be classed as, you know, it's not the right thing to go to for whatever it may well be. But a lot of businesses passed, and there is a lot of interaction. It's what you classify as community. That's a community in its own right. You know, and you know, it isn't necessarily media orientated, or is it not? Because it does get put out on social media. I did it. I got told off doing it, but you know, not too badly. But it was like, you are in here. You know, crack on.
Yeah.
You know, it was me sort of going, I'm here at this BNI doing this.
So what, when you have practiced putting out stuff in whatever form, so you do a lot on LinkedIn and Twitter and things like that, and you do it from a personal point of view, but you're representing the organisation, yeah. You're doing things, what kind of media are you engaging? What's the kind of reaction that you get off people that you are in your community with, you know, your community of practitioners or professionals? Or
yeah, what happened to me is you've actually changed this for me, because in our process of supervision, you mentioned to me that
don't give me any credit. You did all the thinking.
It's not credit. You're doing your job. I learned something in that you say it's not about the technicalities of media anymore. It's not how good you can edit a video or produce a piece, but try and engage with the agencies, go and meet some social workers, go and see kids when they are playing, what they enjoy. That's what we need to capture. You used to mention that change is happening and you want to be part of it, that great quote. So this is what's happening, that I used to do church work in the media expert. When people realized I've studied media, anytime there is a problem within something to do with media, they would call me, oh, we need this editing. Can you fix some pictures for us? This is not working. And before you know it, you know, word spreads. Every time someone is having a party, they need something doing, they call you. I'm like, you know what, I'm not a volunteer, I need to get paid. I eventually moved out of that, and I started enjoying just helping people do it. Do you know where I could do this? How do you produce a film? I'm like, yeah, there's processes, because obviously you can't produce a film from a phone. You could use a good camera or, you know, whatever format you want to use, there's ways in doing it. Where I'm coming from, some people were not aware how these processes go. Then you slowly teach them. And the thing is, when they know how to do it, they enjoy it.
Yeah.
So that's community media developing. But when it's happening, you don't realize it's happening. Like you're saying, that you just, I think it's easy if we form a Facebook group for this and get told off the first time, but people in the end like, actually, I think you're benefiting from it.
I think with anything like that, and with anything in life, you learn from your mistakes, and ultimately, you know, you seek guidance, and, you know, even from Rob. you know, you seek guidance, and what when you start down one path that you think is that's the road for me, and transverses into something else. You know, if you look at sort of, you know, I've had a lot of time in the commercial world, and I've moved into working with Val because I saw real value in them as an organisation. You know, I talked to my wife, you know, on and off for quite some time. I've come away from running my own business to join Val because I actually see that I have a unique position within a very unique organisation where I can help so many different people, and there's just not one cause. There's so many different causes, so many different needs and requirements, and we're there to able to assist with all of those.
It's kind of the thing of the word that I always used to kind of get put around was, you know, it should be like this and it should be like that. And I was thinking, well, it can be whatever it is. And there's a bit more, for me, the ultimate thing with community media is a lot more flexibility about it.
Yes.
And that more creativity, and that you can approach things. You've never got enough resources, but you can approach things in a more kind of imaginative kind of a way, as opposed to having to fit in with the established way that it's done. This is not how it's done on BBC Leicester, or exactly. This is not how it's done exactly. On Radio 2.
It's almost like you've got a blank canvas every single day with a community media, is that there are your own rules and regulations and parameters that you would set, and they're probably, you know, if you have a community group, you have to abide by the restrictions that, but other than that, it's like, what do you want to talk about? What do you want to say? You know, what's the message? You know, what do you want to get out there? You know, what answers are you looking for? There's so many different connotations of that. That, you know, ultimately, you could spend a lifetime in community media and come up with so
never
many,
get anywhere.
Never get anywhere. Yeah,
yeah. You go around in circles. But that, I mean, that's part of what the research then is to unpick, isn't it? What's the process that's driving this?
Efficiency, because like what John said, it's the common notion is community media is insufficiently funded. The capital challenges are there. You know, people seem to like agree on that, but you'd find out like I like your approach you're taking in that sometimes we would think if we can have a large corporate organization to come and fund this or drop thousands and thousands of dollars into
we'd love that.
Everyone would love that, but you'd realize maybe a small business that say sell sandwiches and say, oh, you know what, every time you're doing this with us, we are happy to provide transport for you. Mm. It makes a difference.
Absolutely.
We'll give you free water. People like, oh yeah, it's okay, don't worry, you don't have to take water because there's a gentleman who provides it there. That's I think it's effective for people. It makes a difference. If say someone was to offer someone to look after the kids when you're doing whatever you're doing, people would actually look forward to it, to say, oh no, you don't have to worry about childcare because we can take our kids. That's what people are looking for. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it's you can get these large amounts of money and they don't make a difference at all. Nothing might not get done effectively.
It goes back to what we were talking about with that CSR piece, which I think ties in very much so to the nth degree, which is your local community, you know, wherever that starts, whatever that is. And ultimately, it's not just about putting your hand in your pocket. It's all these different bits that you could offer, whether it's yourself personally, whether it's you've got an ability to, you know, you could bake cakes or whatever it is that you could do, or you know, you're a legal expert, or you're an accountant, and you're just lending your time and your expertise rather than just the money side of things. But it's then getting that out there with regards to, and it goes back and hooks back into community and how you then vocalize that. And one of the best forms that we used to have was you'd actually have a conversation face to face, which I know is a rarity nowadays, but that's how it was. That, you know, and it still is to a degree.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I'm old school, I like meeting people face to face. But then there's all these different avenues that's available today: podcasts, vlogs, blogs, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. You know, the list goes on.
Hang on, we had an expert then. What was that?
What was that? YouTube.
Snapchat.
Snapchat. Yeah. Wow. So there we go.
See? TikTok.
Yeah.
Yeah. See? Yeah.
And that's not a clock, is it?
No.
TikTok. Okay,
no.
I'm just checking. I think. Go on. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say different needs for different generations.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But we kind of, one of the tendencies is we use this word, the community. And there are so many, we interact Absolutely. With different communities on a daily basis, yep. you know, up and down, across, you know, it's kind of, we're not fit, you know, we, you know, to what extent do we feel that we belong to, and what enables us?
So I think we belong to.
To belong to a community.
I think you belong to a lot of different communities on a daily basis, you know. I belong to the train community as I come into work in the morning, because you say hello to people that you've met along the way. That's still a community.
You're that weirdo in the carriage just walking up to random strangers well, yeah, saying hello.
I get bored otherwise. This is only a 10-minute journey. So, you know, my brain's on the go all the time, which drives my wife nuts.
But we live in, I mean, my, you know, kind of the social experience of wandering around a city like Leicester is actually the barriers are up a lot of the time, and you don't want to be stopped by somebody.
Well, you know, We've all been to London and had that conversation with somebody in London, and they're like, they look at you as if, why are you talking to me? Why are you smiling at me? Let alone having a conversation with me. Yeah,
I think there's also, I mean, maybe the point you were trying to make was the fact that people approaching you, talking to you in the street, things like that as well. That sort of low level tension, if you like. I mean, yeah. I often say to my students, particularly in the first year, if you want to go off and experience what Leicester is actually like, I'd walk between the Jubilee Square and the Clock Tower and then back again, yeah. and you'll probably see everything you could possibly want. And one student being really shocked, had come from the Channel Islands, had never seen anyone that was homeless or, you know, actually kind of asking for change on the street. So I think it's that opportunity to be able to engage people in conversations, but also feeling that you're able to make a difference beyond what you see, maybe sitting in a doorway and stuff, and you're not thinking that you can actually do anything about it. Because I think a lot of people would like to help. You know, picking up a point you were making there, John, about people, you know, wanting to help people from the community, you know, do what you can, that little one. I think if we go back to one of the previous podcasts when Chris Shaw was here and we were talking about corporate social responsibility, and I remember making the point that I was only concerned really that we didn't allow corporate social responsibility, which is a fantastic concept. Let's not get away from that. It's a genius idea, you know, kind of getting people to think about the impact of them on their community, but also the people that they employ are from communities, is that it didn't become another tick box exercise like investors in people, you know, which was easy to do. Like, you know, well, we've donated some period products to this school, we've helped with the reading challenge, we've sent them some bars of soap, we've had a collection at Christmas, that kind of stuff. So how do we keep up that pressure in a way that people realise that it has genuine value? And I think one of the things that's quite interesting since the last time we mentioned this subject on the podcast, I think I mentioned the new Finnish Prime Minister, I think she's 34, isn't she? And she's introduced this conversation there around 4-day week and sort of reducing your work hours. And it was, I noticed, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, where Hull has actually asked for permission to introduce a universal basic income. And I think what will come out of those conversations, I suppose maybe even the Indy Ref 2 for Scotland, that kind of stuff, where suddenly what we do is someone will break ranks like Hull and decide, yeah, that the only way you can solve these things, yeah, is to put everybody on a reasonably level playing field. Because what's happening at the moment, it's all well and good that you've got access to these things, but if you can't afford anything, yeah, it's still out of reach. And of course, having been an ex-offender myself, you know, and experienced lots of different ups and downs in life, you suddenly realise, yeah, that if you're lucky enough to find the right person at the right time to help you, you have to be in that position as well. And you find organisations like Help the Homeless who are dealing with that with landlords and employment and stuff like that. So I think we've got some really good examples of people doing it well, and that's really where, from my point of view, the whole solutions journalism comes in. Because with all of this good practice, what we need to do is just make sure that we're not just talking about the problems all the time, but we're actually showing the people that have got the solutions. And if we can then amplify that, what you suddenly realise is that's templatable, you know, that's a kind of good model that might go against your I'm trying to commercialise what I do in community media because I want to earn lots of money.
Yeah.
down to someone's ability to be able to be reasonably altruistic, if you like, almost like, you know, set up your business and then once you've got what you need, give the rest away like Linux, you know what I mean? Sort of make it open source, Creative Commons, that kind of stuff. We just need to be encouraging that. And I suppose people like yourself, John, in positions of power, you know, that you're able to make decisions and put on courses that react to what communities want, because you know then that they'll come on it. I suppose that's really where that kind of outreach and consultation comes in, because there's no point putting a course on that no one turns up for.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we radically reviewed our training program since I've come into post, and you know, we've got the key aspects of the training program that we've noticed over the last 2 years, give or take, so that we can ensure that the core part of what we offer to the VCSE is there. But then there are additions that we want to start putting into place that I know get asked, because I get asked, which is, you know, we get a lot of charities and voluntary organisations, you know, we have conversations, go, how do you go about networking? Well, why don't we have a chat about it? You know, what is it that stops you from going to a network? Don't know anybody. Well, how do you get past that? Well, I don't know. I'm not very confident. Okay, well then let's look at putting programs together that can assist you with that. So, you know, go and talk to another person.
One of the things I've tended to find is that when you're applying for funding to win funding rounds to get kind of engagement, it's when you actually have to explain to people that there's a very low level of capacity in some communities and confidence being a key one. That's not for the likes of us or me. I'm not educated enough for that, or I'm not fashionable enough, or physically able enough. We had that experience with the BBC running training sessions. That, you know, it put more people off than it brought in because of the environment that it was in. You've got to be really careful about how you manage that. How do we get that across to the people who are controlling the you know, kind of, you know, what does our message need to be, that actually we've really got to dig deep into this and go into the root of some of these issues?
I think consistency is one, and it has to be consistent and transparent and honest. You know, everything that I do and have always done, you know, is part of what Valley's all about, which is that it's just completely transparent. You know, we're there as a service, ultimately, for, you know, all of these charities and voluntary organisations, but we're looking to add value. You know, we're a not-for-profit. You know, we still need to earn. We still need to have, you know, money coming into us. We need to be monetized in how we do things, because ultimately, the way that I look at this, naively or not, is we are quite unique in what we do. That unique, that if we weren't there, who'd answer all the questions and give all the training, etc., etc., etc. That lots of charities and social enterprises and community groups ask on a daily basis about, where can we get the funding from? I need some trustees. How do we do that? How do I recruit them?
Amos, what's your experience then of, if you like, civil society within Zimbabwe and the African community in the UK?
It's going to be between age groups, which is young people. They've got their way of doing it. So does the older generation as well. So if I am to talk about my older generation, let's just say I'll put it 55 plus. They are quite interested in finding.
That felt personal, Rob. Did you notice how he looked at both you and I?
Yeah, it went early there.
it's a compliment.
Yeah,
but it's finding how the new things can change things for them. Where before, because communication, you've got instant chats now. You can call if it's connected to a network. You can call for free on a Wi-Fi network. Then young people. So with the older generation in my community. It's effectiveness, how they can save a bit of money, how it's effective. Then with younger people, it's participation. They want to be part of the movement, so to say. So the big thing is they seem to say maybe the mainstream media doesn't understand us. They don't know what's happening with us. If you engage with them and say, this is what I'm trying to do, they will definitely tell you I'm interested, but certain people will judge me. So someone looks at me, they think I'm carrying a knife because I met a certain criteria, but I'm not about that. I might end up carrying it because I'm being threatened. I'm the victim, yeah. So it's when you engage with them, when they become part of the process, especially with, I know with video and photography, a lot of young people, they're interested in doing it. They just don't know how. So if you say, oh, okay, I can take time to teach you, and they learn it, they might say, oh, you know what? I actually want to be a photographer. It's good. So it's just being an agent of change. Let them participate. Let them choose what they want to do. In that, as much as I might be a good photographer because I've learned it, I can inspire someone to do it. That's my job now, to try and teach people how to do it. Then they make a difference in their community or maybe in their own life.
And is that facilitated? Is that stronger when those people can identify with you, for example, because you've gone through that process? You're somebody like them. You're from a similar background.
Yes.
Do we need to put more effort into, you know, putting people in a position where you can actually lead by example?
Yes. Leading by example is one thing, and it's certain things that people would think, like I'm saying, because I'm fitting a certain criteria, that's not for me. I'm meant to be doing this, which is not the case in this modern day now. Anyone can be what they want to be, and it's who you're trying to do it to. You know, who you're targeting, because like you're saying, there is a lot of doubt. There's no training. Maybe more people were doing it to go and reach out to people to inspire them to do it, because some people will tell you studying media it's a waste of time because there's social media, the phones have developed. Don't bring that big camera because we can use our phones. But once they, you know, once they know what it involves to use a good camera, to learn the skill, and just appreciating photography as a skill, now they're saying, oh, you know, actually it's good doing that. Is that how you edit a video? They've got these mysteries how it happens. But when you learn it, I've seen people actually say, oh, I might take that as a hobby. Then I met a pastor in his church who is now running quite a successful media enterprise in his church. People, they watch his videos and stuff online. But when we started, he said to me, oh, it's not necessary. We don't need this. I want to engage with my audience one-to-one. We speak, then people go home. But when social media developed, more and more people liked it. We don't really have to go to church now because we can watch it on Facebook.
Reminds me of lectures at universities I've taught. We don't need to go to the lectures
just
anymore.
It's live now.
Yeah, so you can record
that,
it.
That kind of thing. And, you know, it's got its advantages because communication is just getting better.
John, what's the...
Yes, Rob.
Give us...
There's two.
Tell us a bit about the Invaluable Network, because it's being launched tomorrow.
It is, yeah.
That's the 22nd of January.
Yeah. I think there's a video coming out with myself and Kevin. We're being interviewed by Rachel Hargrave. We should just say the 23rd, but we moved the event because there is... we didn't want any clashes. Because there's an event on the 23rd, which is Suits and Vinyl, which is for Bodie Hodges and Hope Against Cancer. So we purposely moved it to the 22nd because we're nice. But other than that, we didn't want any clashes, so we wanted lots of
just the football.
Well, the thing is when we football. Put that out there, it was the football wasn't there, so. The Invaluable Network, in essence, is for all VCSE. So if 6,000 plus turn up tomorrow, we haven't got enough canapes. They're just for me. But it's for all VCSE to talk to each other. So that's one part of it. And the other is you know, we're a conduit for businesses to have conversations, A, with themselves, and B, with VCSE that are there. Hopefully we can get to a point where we've got the ability where charities and voluntary organisations that sometimes get overlooked, a lot of them do because they're a lot smaller, they don't necessarily have the funds to have a business developer or fundraising manager who is very savvy, with social media, so we can point them in their direction. We have an ability with what we've got and the data that we hold is, you know, if you said to me, Rob, right, actually what I want is I would like a charity within, you know, 2.5 miles of my home location, can you provide that data? Yeah, we can. We can drill it down to that level so that as a business owner, if you've got communities that need assistance in, you know, within walking distance of your work location, then we can do that for you.
Now, in the past, an organisation might have been the central repository of that information. Why a network? What's the difference between being the knowledge, the value holder, the warehouser of information, and the facilitator of a network?
People by people. It's as simple as that. You can, you know, technology is good. I personally believe, and in my humble opinion, you can have the best technology in the world, but ultimately, if you're going to buy something, you know, all 9 times out of 10, you'll do that because of the person that's in front of you. The same sort of goes, you know, why do we go to networking events? You know, it might be because we want to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go and have a cup of coffee with people that you know, or the other end of the evening, you might want to go and have a pint of beer. For me, fundamentally, it's that ethos, you know, so that we've got so many different parts of Val, but ultimately what we're also trying to do is big up other organisations as well. Happens to be about 6,000 of them, you know, and that's kind of what we're looking towards achieving. There's 42,000 plus businesses in Leicestershire. Now, if they all turn up tomorrow, I've done my job. I doubt it.
You know, but you need a stadium for that.
Yeah, it's football on tomorrow. You know. So there's a couple of parts. It's the fact that we are. I think the motto that we're putting out, and something that I've been banging on about, you know, for the last few weeks, is that if we work together, we're stronger together. And what we're looking for ultimately is for businesses to become a little bit more social responsibility, so that they get what that is. It's not all about the money. There are more parts to it than that. And you know, for charities and voluntary organisations, etc., the ability to interact with one another, but the opportunity to come and talk to businesses that they might not necessarily talk to on a regular basis. So hopefully this is a really strong platform that will allow them to do that.
So we always often the model John and I talk about of community media is what we've said earlier, the facilitated conversations. It's not much more difficult than that. It's not much more stressful than that. It's how do you get people to sit down and converse, and you know, and what is a conversation?
Well, as Bob Hoskins put it once upon a time, it's good to talk.
I haven't heard that for a long time. Yeah, it's many years.
I think he might be in that over 50 bracket with us.
close.
So what then do we do in terms of, you know, what kind of recommendations and experiences and pitfalls have you got in terms of the kind of media that you've used to do this? What works and what doesn't work? You know, you're filmmaking, Amos. What have you found has been the stuff that really kind of gets that people find useful?
I think people tend to find things that are relevant, very useful. But then, obviously, everything comes with a positive and a negative. The main challenge for me in filmmaking was engagement, because there's certain things people are not willing to talk about. Even if it's a big part of society, big part of their lives, they're just not happy to talk about. One challenge we're facing, which is I think it's quite dominant in every community now, is mental health. You know, we see people suffering every day, and tell them, you know, you can get help XYZ, you can tell your story to inspire or change others, but people are not willing to do that because of stigma from the society and traditional beliefs. That's the other thing. When you say in my instance, if you're in a foreign society, if you're coming from where we're coming from, mental health problems, it's a curse. Something happened to you from way back in your ancestors, whatever it is, But it's a real problem. It's a simple case of depression. You might need this and that, and it's okay. But that challenge to engage with people, participation. But like you're saying, with filmmaking, it's something that are people engaged in. Now people identify with video, especially if it's communicating with them, and they can identify with the pictures. But it's just, if it's me who's telling the story, I don't want to be part of it. I want to hear your story, but I don't want to say my story, which I think it's a big challenge.
And we've seen a big difference in, you know, the last 5 years about where people consume video. It's no, you know, you watch on your phones.
Yeah.
So people can look at topics that are of more interest to them personally without having to worry about the family situation, being, you know, watching it on TV, you know, or other people being able to, you know, see it on your laptop if it's open on a desk. A phone, you can be sat on the bus,
yeah,
or something. So the filmmaking potential is to talk about those kind of topics would be different.
And also the creative formats that are available now, like video is saying. Back in the day, it was good rhetoric and good leaders who can speak and inspire people. But now, just reading text, moving text, you can identify with this. Oh, I think they're talking about me. But
and the integration of graphics, yes, and things like that. You know what I watched on Sunday evening? I watched a Boeing 777 take off from San Francisco, and then another one of Boeing 7, different plane landing at Charles de Gaulle. It was like 20 minutes each video. It just sat
live
on YouTube.
Live.
No, it wasn't live. It was recorded just on YouTube. And it's like, you know, the stuff that you can watch on.
He wasn't meant to watch it either. He was one of those where you start watching it and get hooked.
Yeah, it just draws you in, and it's a different kind of mindset of programming, which you never thought that would be. You know, the people who work in television, for example, and we the director general of the BBC's just announced that he's Tony Hall is stepping down. And so the whole model of media broadcasting and media professionalism has changed it's, you know, you're watching video through Snapchat or through TikTok and stuff like that. It's not controlled by the large media conglomerates in the way that it was. It's the platforms that are controlling it.
Yeah, all the platforms have changed. I mean, you look at the amount of times that you'll get this on your phones now where you get an alert that comes through because there's a news alert, and you flick in, you have a quick look, and, you know, I don't even read a newspaper anymore. I just read my phone. So I've got everything that I need there. And it goes back to sort of different types of media content. And if you drill that back to localised community media, it's like, well, you know, be careful, there's a police van on such and such a road. You know, it's still letting you know from a community point of view. It's still media. It's still letting you know. It's still newsworthy, just more localised, I suppose.
And we might also see changes. Like we always say, you might not make money from it. We might see people start making money from community media in the future. Who knows? Mm. It's like I said, when I went to Zimbabwe, it's groups that are doing small skits of video, and they literally make money off it because all the companies are using them to advertise instead of the main television, because there's power shortages. There's a lot of hindrances for them to watch mainstream or listening to mainstream media. People are choosing their phones and going on laptops. So if you're doing that, if you're doing those skits, if you're doing whatever it is that people get engaged online, then the companies will approach you and say, can you do this for us for 3 minutes? Then we'll pay you.
So it's the influencer model
of community media, because it's just people who started with their phones. They bought camcorders and doing it in their neighborhoods, and it's everywhere. You go and see them, people get excited. They're the local heroes.
There's a kind of spontaneity to it. How do we foster that spontaneity? Because the danger is that people just imitate Instagram influencers and YouTube celebrities, that kind of stuff, and it becomes this very formulaic. I think in the kind of, you know, the Americanized model, and they, you know, the kind of certain styles of doing things. Whereas actually, you know, I mean, imitation's a useful thing to start with, but, you know, at some point it becomes, I mean, I filter them out from my feeds because I'm not interested in somebody who's just imitative. It's a place to start. But what should we be putting in place that supports people to do it on that more spontaneous basis?
There's somebody who I follow quite a lot, a gentleman called Christopher Lockhead, who three times chief marketing officer, Silicon Valley, He wrote, along with a couple of other people, a book called Play Bigger, which was a book that is designed for big organisations to become category king, so that, you know, they become the major influencers of what they're going to be sort of doing. And then he wrote another book with another author, her name escapes me now, which was called Niche Down, which was specifically designed for small, you know, SMEs. But he's now one of the number one podcasters in the US, and his whole ethos is be different. You know, you're all individual. For me, I like to think, although I'm probably not, that I am a little bit different in the way that I look at things. You know, the Invaluable Network has come off the back of some of the conversations that I've had with lots of charities and voluntary organisations and businesses, and off the success of the Val Awards back in November. You know, we wanted to continue that and provide a platform so that we could
keep the conversations going.
The conversations going, yeah, absolutely. Now, how can we help you? How can we help you? That's the whole remit. So, you know, we're all different. It's just that we conform to society or what we're told to do. And you're right, you know, we're human, and some of us, do as we're told.
Some of the time.
So, you know, if you've got a massive audience and you are an influencer of repute, then, you know, you all get the minions that follow them, you know. But going off what you were saying is, I think ultimately you've got to try to be different in what you do and how you do it, because otherwise you're just the same as everybody else.
Well, let's finish off with an example, if we can think of one, of something that you've seen recently that you think would be good, you know, a good example of that kind of distinctiveness.
Well, now you put me on the spot.
Well, you've mentioned, or you've given us one. This guy, this. What was the name of the author again?
Well, I'll put the link. It's a gentleman called Christopher Lockhead, and his podcasts are very, very good. You know, so there's that, and I think the other one was I did something very, very different yesterday. I went back to school to a degree. I went and sat in the training session for the whole day. And for me, I walked away with more questions than I had answers, but in a good way, because it's made me go back and look at some of the things that I'm doing on a daily basis and how I can be different and what I need to put out on social media. Although I thought I was doing, you know, the right thing and I wasn't doing the wrong thing, but there's got to be a method to the madness that goes out. So for me, it was like, well, actually, yeah. So yesterday was a great example. You know, I went back to school, it was great. I'll do it again.
Amos, what about you? Is there something you've seen recently?
Well, my observation led me to this. I don't know if it's a great idea, but I think it's quite useful.
All ideas are great ideas.
Okay, but I was observing the Nabra Road business community, and I said, a community approach to advertising is efficient in that, if say there was a website that can enlist all the products found in that area, you are likely to use that than to try and use Google to find it. If there is a local company advertised that can deliver around that area, it's more efficient than trying to get delivery or Uber, because it's got a wider engagement in the Leicester area. So if it's just targeting that area for business, I think it makes a difference.
It's down to the neighbourhood level.
Yeah.
Neighbourhood level, yes.
You seen anything recently, John?
I think we need to be cautious around community media, by not letting it go down the same road of the mainstream media and making the same mistakes. That's one around not so much truth, but trust. Who do you trust to tell you the truth is what we're trying to equip people with these days. And also the fact that community media, for the first time, when we set up Citizen's Eye in 2008 and ran it for 7 years, you know, we were training people how to do Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and Flickr, and they stopped it in 2014 when people were able to pick all those things up themselves and have their own bits and pieces. But since then, it's been very much about trying to replicate some of the ways that don't work. And I think what we need to be doing is looking at the mainstream media and realising that if community media is still the only way for a community, whether that's diaspora or community of mental health or, you know, ex-offenders or homelessness, refugee and asylum seekers, if it's the only way for them to own and shape their own narrative, that it doesn't get excluded because of who they are, because of who the community is, because then we're on to ignoring that, because that's about them, and we only learn about them by looking at the mainstream media that's quite happy to write about them or make programs about them or where they live or how they live. So I think that kind of who do you trust to tell you the truth is one of those things that we need to be equipping young people like this young man here at school. And I think for me, that's what really the Documentary Media Centre is here, by making it a museum, archive and a library. It's a different way of shaping the narrative, that it's not a training centre, it's not a smart hub, it's not that. It's a way of getting young people to come in, and anybody who wants to come in, to not just be aware of things, but actually learn a little bit more about maybe some of the colonial past, some of the things that have happened, that basically own and shape the way that communities are viewed by our mainstream media and some of our institutions that are still being challenged around institutional racism. Because, you know, that's the way it always was, but that doesn't mean the way it always needs to be. And I don't, you know, I'm always constantly fighting about trying to park this thing as a conversation that you people should be having over there. You know, straight into the terminology, aren't we? Them, they, us, those people. We need to be making sure that it's mainstream. And I think the only way we are going to turn around some of the quite damaging negative aspects of what we saw play out for the last 3 years with Brexit is if we start introducing things to, you know, debating, opportunities to find out about a real past, a real history, not sort of, you know, dates, names, numbers, facts, events, but sort of, you know, reasons why, and actually just addressing some of this stuff, because it's really important. Because I think suddenly when you realise that, you know, why certain people feel a certain way, then I think the final example I'll use is when I was saying to you the other day, you know, I spent sort of 12, 13 years at school learning everything apparently that was important, and then 5 years in the army learning about who we liked and why we didn't like them, and I spent the next 32 years realising all of that was wrong. Because what you do, you have to go out and educate yourself that, yeah, you know, every Iranian, Iraqi, Afghanistani and Russian person I've ever met are actually quite nice, you know. But it's what type of person you meet and who they are and what they believe, yeah, and their belief systems. But when you come down to fundamentally the fact that particularly someone that's come maybe from some of those countries that I've just mentioned, because they're, you know, they're fleeing war and stuff, and all they're caring about is education, their family, working and being treated respect, they're actually not looking for stuff for nothing. They're looking to just be included, and community media has a real role to play in that.
I think the one thing I saw this week was, which I thought is worth sharing, I'll put it on the link, it's the Chatty Cafe, and it's a scheme, I think it started in Scotland, I need to look into it in a bit more detail, where you put a sign on a table in a cafe which is basically says, come to this table if you just fancy a conversation, if you fancy a chat, because there is something about doing this, having these kind of conversations where you do feel better, you feel, and if we can introduce that into Leicester, as just a simple thing, that there's a sign in the window says we have a chatty table, and you just come, and anybody can join in at any point just to have a conversation or just to listen.
Now, Rob, in the past we've run a community media cafe at Vale in the reception, yeah, cafe with Kevin, yeah, with the computers and stuff like that. So why don't we all collectively agree that you'll go away and all die at a chatty cafe? Yeah, we'll invite people. Yeah, and we'll come and do
a podcast.
Yeah. I think it's a really great idea.
You can do some research. He'll be with a clipboard going around asking, yeah, people questions.
All it takes is a cup of tea. Right. Okay. So we always finish off. We're well over the hour now, which is fantastic. We always finish off with, how do people get in touch with you? If you want people to be in touch with you,
absolutely.
What's
the
best way for people to get in contact?
For me, it's give me a call on my landline
or Twitter.
I'm all over social media.
What's your Twitter feed?
At John Woodcock. Simple as that.
Amos, what about you?
Yeah, same as me. It's all my name, Amos Bilson, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, LinkedIn. I don't use Snapchat, you guys.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I don't use Snapchat either. Yeah. And I definitely don't use TikTok.
John, what about you?
At Doc Media Centre.
Yeah. And you can find out more about Decentred Media at decentred.co.uk. We're on iTunes, just search for Decentred Media. I think we might be on Spotify, can't remember. And then also on Instagram and Twitter at Decentred Media as well. So until next time, thank you very much.
Cheers, thank you.
You've been listening to the Decentred podcast. I'm Rob Watson. If you want to find out more information, contact me on Decentred Media via Twitter or go to decentred.co.uk.